You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Welcome to Quantum Leap Book Club. During the next hour, beloved mind scientist Parisha and her guests from around the world will read and discuss various best-selling books with well-known authors. Every show will apply retention techniques designed to help you to absorb powerful knowledge to effectively change your life. Join us every week for a thought-provoking hour and re-listen as often as you can. You will be delighted by what you learn, and you will be excited by the results. Are you ready to take the quantum leap? Here's Parisha.
Welcome to the Learning Center for Human Development's Quantum Leap Book Club. We are broadcast on the Law of Attraction Radio Network. I am Parisha, your host this week, and with me are my co-hosts, Geraldine Dalby Ball, is actually in Sydney, Australia, and Geraldine is a reforesting engineer, or a person who mothers our forest, or one who actually loves talking and working with the Earth Mother. Very, very much attuned to nature and to spirit. And we have Trina Cooper in Denver. Trina, very much an entrepreneur and a spiritual teacher as well. And we have Joyce Mullenhauer, who is actually into health and holistic practices and is an RN. We have Rosemary Heyer, who I think may be with us. I don't see her, but that she would actually, she interprets and creates, helps interpret English and teaches English to German students. So this week, we have been requested to revisit Chapter 8. There has been a number of people who feel that they have great confusion in as much as what the topic of this covers. And in reviewing it myself, I see that what we're discussing here brings in some parallel world considerations, as well as looking at our effect on and the universe's effect. And we'll come back page by page. And actually, I'll ask the co-host to actually help cover particularly what that information is, because if you're confused about it, and it's true, some of the particular information and people who actually sent in the request are saying that this is a part of what they consider their spiritual life that they feel they really, really need clarity on, and that they heard in some respects things that seem to contradict what they believe, and then again, in a way, saying that some of it's true or some of it's not scientifically sound, and they would like clarity. Well, that's exactly what we want you to do. We would like you to take these particular requests and information to our website and actually follow with us each week. So we're looking at Chapter 8, and we actually will start this week with discussing exactly what it's talking about as far as what the scientists see. So I would ask one of my co-hosts that maybe actually took lead last week, okay, because I was not on due to other matters, okay? Actually, the question that one of the people brought was very direct to the middle of the page here. As they like to explain things in a racial manner, so to avoid the magical idea of popping and leaping in and out of mind into matter, one physicist invented the parallel universes. Their questions was actually, so are there really parallel universes, or are we saying that somebody made up parallel universes in order to have a storyline manner of how to discuss or explain something? So at this point, any of you co-hosts can speak up that feel you have a take on that. The particular question is, okay, are we really existing in parallel universes, or are we just trying to have some method of understanding? Okay, so who would like to take that?
Hear me. So I thought I would talk to this, and science has been talking about us existing in parallel universes, and where Einstein couldn't get his head around it or start talking about it, another scientist did come up with the idea that we exist in parallel universes. I truly believe that we do. And we've talked about it on this show. We've talked about it in other books as well, that there are parallel universes that we can, that we're in. And what this is actually talking about is the fact that the universe that we're in is the one that we're giving most meaning to, or that we're observing. more so than any others, and that we can dive into other possibilities simply by going into the imaginal realm and exploring a direction that it could be going in and experiencing that for ourselves that exists when we're exploring in the imaginal realm. So each of these possibilities actually is created as we give meaning and observation to them, where some don't really come into our existence just because we aren't paying attention. That's the way I see what's explained on the pages.
Okay, I think what you're saying, I can understand that somebody will take that you're endorsing the fact that it is, that there is a reality of parallel universes. And yet we have scientists who said, no, it's just a matter of drawing the picture to help understanding. So why don't we just start to read the pages so that we know that our listeners get the full impact of what we're saying. So it would be to, let's just start at the page, Einstein had a difficult time, Trina, and read that.
Okay. Einstein had a difficult time accepting the weirdness of the standard model of quantum physics. This model supposes that an observer has a strange effect on anything observed. Namely, the observer causes a single actuality to pop out from a cloud of possibilities. A pretty whimsical idea, difficult for physicists to accept, as they like to explain things in a rational manner. So, to avoid this magical idea of a popping leap of mind into matter, one physicist invented the parallel universes or many worlds theory of quantum physics. It says, and this was discussed in chapter 5, it says that the observer does not cause a popping action. Instead, the observer merely interacts with the object being observed. And if the object had several possible outcomes, when the observer would also find him or herself witnessing each possible outcome in a different parallel world.
Okay. It kind of says something different than you said, doesn't it? It says the observer does not cause a popping action. Well, if you go back to chapter 5, you realize that the popping action is that when we observe something, and we actually focus on it, we can dimensionalize it, and that's the popping, okay? There's so many beautiful tools out there and books that you can buy to where you'll look at a page and it just looks like a full page of dots or some other kind of design. But then as you gaze and you focus on it with the gaze, then it actually dimensionalizes and something rises up out of just a page of dots, okay? So it's saying, it says that the observer does not cause a popping action. Okay, that would be the popping action. Instead, the observer merely interacts with the object being observed. Okay, what does that mean? What does it mean that we merely interact with it?
Mainly what we observe is what comes into our field or our awareness, and we interact with that at that point.
Okay. And where did it come from for us to interact?
It came from the field. It came from a parallel, from a world or a universe or a field of energy.
Okay. It says here, if the object had several possible outcomes, then the observer would also find him or herself witnessing each possible outcome in a different parallel world.
It takes
not, you're not in your head, and I can tell you that doesn't make a bit of sense, so don't try to make any out of it, okay? We would look about as silly as this sounds, all right? So basically what we're saying here is that as always, physicists have different opinions, okay? And that at this point, And at this point in time, now remember, this book has been written some years back, okay? At this point in time, we do realize that there are other vibrational fields that we resonate through. You want to call them parallel worlds? Okay, go for it. Okay. If you want to just see them as fields, which is what they basically respond to as when you're talking to a scientist. Okay, so there are those fields. But again, our listeners are saying, so where is the whatever that we're supposed to be observing come from? Is it already in the field? Is it there? And the answer to that is yes. Okay. And it's there because someone else has already put it there. I mean, someone else meaning someone has already put an idea and a thing into reality or into time matter. Okay. And it can have effects on you. Sometimes you see them, sometimes you won't. So the popping that we're talking about where something actually focuses in is that I teach most of the time when I'm working with students and with spiritual seekers is that you need to become aware of the environment around you. And the strongest example I can give you of what Wolf's point is here, which is a good one, okay, is our awareness. The actual popping that we're talking about is the focus or the awareness we put on something. Okay. So whatever we're looking into, each one of us would have a different experience with that. Okay. And because it is sort of, anything you look at is actually some part of the tetrahedron. So it would only matter at where you're looking at it from that it would be have that effect or impression on you. So are there many probabilities at the same time happening in time matter that we're calling parallels? Yes, there are other fields that are happening at the same time. Why is the one you're looking at particular? Is because that particular one was more impactful and magnetic to your frequency. So if five of us are looking at the elephants and we're walking around the elephant, not standing stagnant, but moving around the elephant, we're going to see and focus on different parts, though we're all looking at the same thing. And if we're just walking around it, we might never look up and see that the elephant has hair on its head, okay? We may never look down and see that they have toenails on their toes. Okay, or that they even have toes. Again, it would be wherever your vibration acknowledges or has impact with what part of whatever. And at this point, it's actually the brain is actually taking care of tons of material with that. Did you see this one little perspective? But in the brain, there is a network of action going on. And so basically you are tuned into it and it's not apparent or physical time matter in the space that you're in. I'm hoping that helps some of you, at least with the other questions that you were asking, okay? So are we saying there are parallel worlds? No, we're saying that scientists have given different perspectives on time matter experience and calling it parallel worlds. Are me and my co-host actually scientifically licensed and based to give it a name? No, we're telling you what we're reading with Wolf, as Wolf is saying. In science, there is still the argument that it is there or is there not. And how Wolf goes on to get involved with it as we read and answer some of your other questions, because a lot of you also had a lot of questions about the auric field. Okay, and the part about the aura that you didn't understand, and that would be on page 122. So Geraldine, why don't you cover that by actually starting to read? Now I'm going to leave it up to you, co-host, too. You may actually feel you need to go back because it starts on 121. Joe Sixpack. Okay. And before we go forward, let me come back as a good teacher here. Is there anything on page 121 and 120 that any of you co-hosts feel actually brings a clear determination on the parallel question?
One thing that assisted my understanding how it is an experiment that we were given when we were in high school, and we were told to bring in a flower, quite a plain looking flower. And in the class, they put it under ultraviolet light. And it was one of those times when I had no words and I just looked at it, because this plain looking flower to me, that I would say, this is a white flower. When you put the ultraviolet light on, it had these runways of patterns and dots and everything else. And they said, well, that is how a bee would see it. And it was a time when I went, oh, so a flower, it's not the thing. There's an interaction between the ability or the mechanism of the viewer. So I saw it as a white flower, but a bee saw it as this multicolored array of runways. So then I said, well, what's a flower? The flower all of a sudden didn't exist as its own entity. It needed to exist with the influence of the observer. And having the experience of when I saw that, that gave me some feeling of what's being spoken about here, that it can be this or this, depending on who and how we observe.
And knowing that we never see, right? We don't see with our eyes. The eye gathers what? Gathers the frequencies that are in the field. And then it's our brain that puts it together as an object or thing. So the bee's particular mechanism of how it relates and sees is exactly what you said. It's true. Birds the same way. Each and every species has a very different way to be. Actually, the brain gives them a different perspective on everything. And one of the things I've learned is you have Asian people and their particular perceptive ability, they can see and do colors are different for them than for most other people. So even in the human, there are differences that we react or perceptively see colors as well as forms differently. And so is that evidence that there are other parallels that we're actually, we may not be viewing in the same parallel? The answer to that is yes, the brain actually has a way that it works with many frequencies and feels in the same breath. So is there anything anybody else wanted to cover on that, on 120-121?
I would like to. I thought that on more than one place here in the chapter, he talks about the meaning in life for us. And his piece on this page is bringing out the fact that when we put a focus on a particular item that is different than we've ever done before, then not only do we become different, but what we see is different. So that kind of fits into the possibility of this thought that there's parallel worlds, that we actually are step into a new world because we are different. So that made a lot of sense to me. And then he also talks about the observation and the fact that searching and for meaning is a real search. It isn't just something in the air. And so with our searching and really the importance of searching, that allows us to move it into a new perspective and perhaps a new parallel world, if that could be the description.
Okay, I'm going to request, Geraldine, that you start reading at the top of 120 and read that page, please. Einstein once said
to the inventor of this parallel universe theory, Princeton University physicist Hugh Evatt, that he couldn't imagine how a mouse could change the world simply by observing it. Evatt replied that it wasn't the universe that was changed by the mouse, but the mouse that was changed by the universe. Instead of pursuing a single course through history, the mouse follows a number of tracks in parallel universes, each track splitting off into a new comparable history as the mouse goes about sniffing his way, searching for the cheese. And as goes the mouse, so go you and I.
Stop there. What do you think? What is that saying?
It reminds me of a choose your own adventure book, that at any one point your history is where you are. However, at that moment, there's multiple possibilities of your next action. And so every time there's the multiple opportunities, that's the parallels. But as soon as you choose one, it's chosen. So as you go along, it's like you're almost collapsing all the possibilities to the one that you actually chose at that time, but it doesn't limit you for the next step because there are still many paths that you could take at any moment.
Okay, I have highlighted here that one of the direct questions was explained. Instead of pursuing a single course through history, the mouse follows a number of tracks in parallel universes. And again, questioning, are there really parallel universes? Okay. Each track splitting off into a new comparable history as the mouse goes along sniffing his way, searching for the cheese. Okay. Do you understand that? No. The answer to it, no, you don't. Okay. None of us do. So what we're saying here is the best we can make out of it is all the other stuff we've read. And of course, it's very obvious to everyone at this point, we do accept there's parallel universes, and we keep coming back trying to prove it by what we're looking at here. So for those of you that are confused with it because you have no notion yet or conviction of parallel world existence, I can see where that would really give you a run. Okay, I can't even, and I'm very creative, I can't even imagine or follow what I'm supposed to understand by this mouse chasing cheese through parallel worlds. What is the point? What is the bottom line? Any of you got one on that? And here again, some of you in your stuff, at least two of you, had brought forward that you were under the impression from the front part, some of the chapters before number 8, that it actually said that the observer affects what is being observed. And here you're hearing, no, the observer doesn't affect it, that it affects the observer. So yeah, you do have right here to have some further need of explanation. I can tell you, I can be of no help at all trying to help you qualify the mouse trip, okay? So as we go along, we can look. But here it is saying that as we move, what I can make of it, okay, is that as we move, as Geraldine has said, and also what you have said, Joyce, is that as we move forward in life, just doing our usual, like the mouse looking for cheese, we're looking for whatever we want to in our life, okay, we are unaware of how many parallel fields or fields, let's not don't get them confused here, Parisha, whatever you want to call it, parallel worlds or fields, we have no awareness of how many fields we're moving through as we move through just whatever our ordinary pace and whatever our ordinary focus is in life. Okay, so that being the best right now, I think that we'll go with that. So, Geraldine, can you go on and read accordingly?
Accordingly, each storyline or history we follow meaningfully connects a single future event, an event that is destined to occur, and an actual past event.
Okay. Go for that.
So that's like the if you put something in the future and you have the present, then the story, as you said previously, oozes out in between. So you need the two points, and then you have a storyline.
Anybody else have a reflection on that? Okay, each storyline or history we follow meaningfully connects a single future event. How is that so? An event that is destined to occur and an actual past event. I want to say to my co-host so that they're not as bewildered as you might be as to what we're doing here, okay? This all came about, beloveds, because I've actually said many times on the show, as well as in my teaching classes, okay, that I feel this book is one of the best books for a beginner, okay? Remember that, beginner, okay? And then beginner is trying to get concept of what's going on with the mouse, and now we're talking about what we're doing right now, connecting to what something else is, and then a future, okay? So remember, we're talking to a few beginners here. Obviously, the number of people who have questions and confused are not everybody that's listening. So we really need to know that we're trying to help somebody that's trying to now walk into this, understand that. An event that is destined to occur, why? And is now actually past event. So accordingly, how do we explain that? Each storyline, what storyline?
It's sort of like any storyline because this is
what is a storyline? You're assuming there's a misunderstood word here. What's a storyline? A storyline or history we follow. What does that mean? Storyline or history. We need to have definition of that to go on. So each storyline or history we follow meaningfully connects a single future event or an event that is destined or at this point destined to occur and is actually a past event. That's pretty heavy. And do any of you have any particular clear perception of that? Okay, can you go on and read, Geraldine? But I think that this kind of just even adds more complexity to it. These events.
These events occur in each world and therefore exist in all of them. Well, they're studying. These events occur in each world and therefore exist in them all.
Go on. Maybe if we get more information, it'll make more sense. Okay, so go on.
If we think of the parallel worlds as sheets of paper, we can think of the end points as punched holes that go through every sheet. And our knowledge or present awareness depends on its relationship with both the one actual past event and the one destined future event that punches through all of the parallel realities in which we exist. Thus, what we experience now depends on both the past and the future in the new and unexpected ways. So although it may seem to be so a single supposedly already established past event or even a sequence of past events does not determine the present.
Okay. Somebody's going to get a prize at the end of this show, right? It's like, oh, the more we look for clarity, the deeper that we go in the rabbit hole, right? Okay. Want to go on. The future also.
The future also plays a role. This dependency of our present awareness on a single future event, a single past event, and the presence of other parallel storylines not only establishes the storyline we follow, it gives us the feeling of free will, the sense that we could have taken another path through life. In a manner of speaking, we did. Yet life seems to go on by so ordinarily. Why can't we be aware of these other histories? Why don't we see into the future? What makes us singularly aware of this storyline? And where are those others' uses anyway?
even the book is posing questions that we're looking at and trying to find, yeah. Right? All right. And as it turns out,
the storyline with the greatest probability becomes what we're aware of. It becomes our remembered history. This history, in turn, becomes significantly meaningful. And meaning itself has a quantum physical basis. significant meaning arises as the most probable story between an event in the future and an event in the past. Hence, that which is meaningful turns out to be that which is most probable, the most plausible, and that depends on a lot of things, including what we believe and what culture we accept as real.
Go on. Parallel universe.
Parallel universes, other worlds, inextricably linked to our own, play a critical role in the functioning of these storylines. When we see things anew, we enter a parallel universe where we have the opportunity to reinvent ourselves. In so doing, we enter a new parallel world. We already exist in these parallel worlds, only our viewpoint has changed. The search for meaning in life is actually a real search, an odyssey or exploration into multiple parallel worlds of possibility that appear to change with each and every action we take. Our observations really don't change us or the many worlds around us, but they do provide new meanings in our lives when we shift our viewpoint between worlds. This scheme works because extending around each and everything is an alchemical aura in space and time. This field is quite physical. It appears as light, and this light is not captured or confined to any single world or event, but corresponds to transitions between worlds or events.
Okay, let's move toward if not being able to help a person, a new person, understand this. How, what good, what can they apply in their development and their revelations? What can they actually use? What of this can they actually use to explore their own perimeters of development, their own expansion of mind? How, if anything, could they use the examples that you just read here to actually change viewpoints in their life or situations in their life, as he's saying here he can do? It says we already exist in these parallel worlds, so it's not something they have to do to go get in the parallel world, okay? You know, it's only our viewpoint has changed. Okay, so what like a circumstance? My thoughts are if a person found themselves in a very intense, maybe stressful situation, something's not going the way that you actually planned it or thought it could be. Okay, that what I hear here is just looking to something else. Maybe something similar, maybe not. But looking to something else actually helps us begin to adapt a better perspective of what we're stressing over or what we're not clear with. It actually, more than anything that I get from this, and I, after the questions were given, I reread the chapter. Okay, more than anything, I feel this part of it is saying that we have to do something. We have to move forward regardless of how climatic a situation may be in our view, okay? If we just go the next step, we just turn to another way of asking the same question maybe, or actually reading something else, or just simply walk away from it for a while. Like Geraldine said, maybe look at a flower, maybe look at something else and realize as you see it, some other species, some other human being would absolutely see something different. As long as you're working those neural nets, I have to go to brain research and brain development when I go to some of Wolf's stuff, okay? Is that I know this, if the brain never stops, and if you try to just dwell on the complexity or confusion, it will just deepen, and there will be more layers of it. It's the matter of stop change, and actually then it's at that point one of the other possibilities or parallels or fields actually become something you can work with and which helps you right now to change whatever you believe and are convinced the situation is at hand. Any of you co-hosts have something else to that you would like to add to it?
I would like to add a couple of things that will help me is to go back to the chapter where the cubes were. And I hadn't realized the first time I had read that over that once you have seen that there's more than one way to see those cubes. It's in your memory. You can only see one version at a time, but you're actually storing the other memories. So that, in addition to what you have shared this today on the elephant, and we can all walk around the elephant and pick out totally different details. I see that fitting right in with what you've just said, that if you step away from it and get your focus somewhere else, suddenly all those pieces make sense. And I just love the fact that different experiences I've had that I can make use of today are there in my memory if I'm just willing to allow them.
Okay. Anyone else?
I'd like to take a stab at this too, because when I look at this or I hear what it's saying, I think of all the times, and going back to the idea of storyline, when people write a pilot for a TV show or a movie or something, there's a storyline about what's going to happen with everyone. And sometimes, or then he talks about history. Well, sometimes we dive back into our histories and all the things that have happened to us, and we react based on history. So what he had said in a past chapter really talked about the fact that we create stories all the time, and that that's the way we move as we're in our physical existence, and the way our mind works is we create stories. So as we look at this, there's potential, and it's great to be able to move into the imaginal and say, well, if I did this, this kind of thing could happen. If I did this, then these kinds of things could happen. And each one of them, you can jump from one place and say, all right, I'm going to put my focus on this one. And then say, you know, I don't like it. I think I'm going to switch and go back over here and try this path. So that's what it seems like he's talking about here, is that where we put our attention and the direction, when he says, when we see things anew, we enter a parallel universe where we have the opportunity to reinvent ourselves. So as we take in new knowledge, and as you were talking about, create new neuronets in the brain, we're going to see things differently. And we're going to react to them differently than what we would have if we had never known that before. Our awareness never would have been drawn there. So really, this viewpoint, when our viewpoint changes, basically the direction that we move begins to change. And we can always fall backwards. I mean, in life, there's times when our old patterning will jump back in and we'll start diving into the, oh, I'm not good enough, or this isn't going to work, or and then you can stop yourself, like you said, stop change and say, wait a minute, where am I going? I'm going this way. I don't want to go this way. Let's shoot back over here and go this direction, because this is the way I want to go. So it's kind of moving back and forth in all of those. And we get to choose. We really get to choose.
Very, very good. One of the things that come to mind when you're talking is, like, very recently with a large group of people that I work with that are seeking to actually have, like, not small changes in their life. They're looking for actually stepping into huge empowerment, meaning to actually take a lot of the accumulated material that they've read or studied during their time of search and seeking, okay, and actually begin to have that really powerful impact on the world, okay? But when they look at who it is present, who they are, and how people see them in the present, okay, then you have to start, and immediately we start working with the neural net and wanting to change the particular story and the storyline, okay? And what I had asked them to do is to actually go to numerology, and we studied some numerology and actually had them study the frequency and vibration that they hold in numerology, which actually works with our codes, our own resonating presence and force. And when they found, and I gave them a particular exercise, that, okay, when you put this together and you read this, this is who God put together. This is who creator, whatever the sacred word is for the what, okay, actually put in and is in-housed and in the DNA that you possess right now. So you have past, present, and future right there. And in order for you to take that past, which was your birthright, you came in with it, and make in the present time a decision of whether you want to go on with where you're at and it not delivering where you want to be, or the change you have to make and actually live in the harmony of your own vibration. And that vibration, admittingly, by each person is very different than what they know they are today. Okay, so that's your storyline. So when you look at that and you begin to focus on those characteristics, and when you introduce yourself or you need to have a bio, or you just meet someone and they say, well, what is it that you do? Or, well, then how, tell me more about yourself. And you start to introduce yourself from the numerology, the vibrational field you are. You have walked through every parallel there is, 14 of them, at this point in science. And so what we can do and what we can help with in the little time we have left with those of you, I deeply appreciate your questions as well as your challenge, okay, is that when we look at that, what this is clearly saying is that at any given moment to where we change the scene, any given moment, we determine awareness of observing. Just observing, that's the mouse story, just observing. The mouse is observing one thing, he's looking for cheese. And in that observation of observing and looking for cheese, it has moved through many, many fields of vibrational existence and isn't aware of any of it. All it's looking for and will recognize is when it finds the cheese. I would say to each and every one of you, especially those of you who have taken my advice and started reading this book as your first exploration into self-enlightenment, okay, is that right now you're that mouse just looking for the cheese, okay? There's a lot of different cheese. We could say Colby cheese. We could say American cheese. We could say Swiss cheese. The mouse just knows cheese. There's other details of cheese that the mouse doesn't know. It just knows that when it finds something that embodies the description of cheese, it's going to eat it. And along the way, it has passed through all these other things, totally unaware. This is the reality of you saying that you're living, and even the fact that this material is confusing you, and I'm not saying it's not intense, okay, but you're looking at something with a preset determination or a preset question. You're not listening. You're already questioning. And when we come to wanting to change or become the most powerful being we can be, each of us destined, each and every human being destined to greatness, you cannot be in the miracle of what your physical and mental and spiritual body is without knowing something powerfully, powerfully magnificent has happened. And when you do that, are you living to it, maximizing it? No, people don't. We've come from a world where we're walking through the world cooperating with whatever the particular program is, which again is a storyline. The storyline is what? You be good at 5, 6 years old, we put us in a box called school. You go through the 12 years of school, then you get in another box called college, and then they start demanding of you to determine what you want to do with the rest of your life. God forbid you live to be 100 years old, because you've got to now think about it when you're 18 and determine what it is, right? So we're all going through those things. That's the mouse looking for the cheese. We're looking for, what is life? What are we supposed to do in life? What is our purpose? How are we going to, do this? I may die tomorrow. I may live to be 100. You want me to know all of that right now? No. But what it is saying is pick. And if you know, those of you who want to, do it through astrology, do it through numerology, do it through something that gives you a process to actually start questioning yourself and see, like in the numerology, what I said to people is read the attributes of the numbers that are now saying this is your vibration. Do you relate to it? Do you find it something you want? Does it excite you? Do you look at that and say, I wish that I was that? Okay. All of that being said and done, that's you moving through all these transitional stories that he's talking about here. And you'll come to a decision. And then that decision will depend on what parallel you determined and that you're in. And so if you decide, this is who I want to be, this is how I want people to see me, this is the epitaph that I want written at the end of my life. Okay, now, the storyline begins right there. Every day, like the mouse, you have to continue to seek and live and actually find that is you, and that's how you spent time. See, life is nothing other than that we spend time for experience. We exchange time for experience, and we call that life. So we have to determine. I think it's real clear here in these first few pages that Wolf is saying we have to determine that. And the effects of us just living and moving through what is ordinary to you will continue to bring you the ordinary that you're living. And if at this point you're one of the beginners that's exploring what I would consider the spiritual sciences, okay, then you're going to find yourself every time you read a page, you're going to be in a different place. Okay, in this case, we read how many, 6 or 7 paragraphs, and we were all in a different place with each one of them, right? So the co-hosts were trying to figure, well, how does this one fit in the other 7 chapters? You know, is there anything I can pull out of the other 7 chapters that's going to help you understand that all scientists don't agree with parallel worlds? Okay, that's a given. Doesn't mean it has to confuse us at all. What is real is that there are many, many vibrational fields. We can prove that. And each one of them, when you are in any one of them, it's different than the other that you were in. So if we can just move to that at this point in time, if we can just move to that and allow that to happen, pick where you want to go. Nope, where you're at right now need not have the problems that's withholding you from being the most powerful person you could ever be. You determine that. You put your restrictions on it. You put on it whatever it's going to take that somebody else has told you it's going to take. No. You cannot let anyone get between you and the sun is a traditional statement my grandmother Cherokee would say to me. You never let anybody get between you and the sun. We stand pure in the sun. That means you. Why were you sent in individual and unlike any other human being, past or future? No one has ever been what you are. A uniqueness that's unquestionable and proven. Yet how are you spending and exchanging this time and this energy toward being the greatest that you can be? What are you allowing to be the box that you've made and that you're in? But if you go to the description, especially in the numerology, and the particular numerology that I go with is made up of many of the esoteric studies, not just numerology. When you find that description of yourself, and every day you read that description, and every evening you read that description, and you, in the beginning of your day, you focus on the particular attributes you're going to emanate, meaning you're going to live like the mouse, you're just going to keep going through the day with it. And at the end of the day, you evaluate, what did I do today that changed yesterday and will definitely affect tomorrow? And that's what Wolf is saying here, that it takes whatever is the past, or what Geraldine had said is memory, whatever memories and experiences we have. And whatever we've done today, are we still in those memories or have we created new ones? And you can only do that through seeking, which is what we're asking you to do with us each week in our book. Seek. But know that everything that you read will have a different vibrational feel for you. And where it takes you is individual to you. So we will come back to this we will not be broadcasting through the year between now and New Year's. But when we come back, we'll actually come back to chapter 8. So those of you, the 18 and 20 of you that had actually sent in questions, we'll come back to answering that because this is a pivotal point in the book. And this is intense material. So do not get discouraged at all about it. And we're hoping that we've clarified some of that. I'd like to ask my co-host, do you have anything that you would like to add in these final moments?
I have a quick analogy that helps. When I'm thinking of when I have a radio and I'm tuning into a radio station, just because I'm listening to one particular station doesn't mean that the others aren't existing there. It's up to me to change the dial. And when I think of like my number and who I am in my ideal self, some things that help is to actually know, for example, that that radio station exists. If I want to listen to classical, there needs to be something in there that says, I know what classical is, so I'm going to now change the tune. So it reminds me to, as you're saying, seek experiences of being a version of the ideal self. Because then I actually can know if I've tuned the radio to that frequency.
I hear you. That's good. That's clear. Anyone else?
I'd like to just add that what I would, from the example of the mouse, because I've always enjoyed the curiosity that animals show, whether it's a dog you've taken for a walk or a cat, whatever, animals, birds, and nature, in my observation, have been curious beings that explore every day, every moment. So what I would take from this that would be the most powerful thing I could do is to be curious. And with that traveling, like the mouse, going and searching, have some fun with it. Because like you say, you can get partway down and realize, well, that didn't get me the cheese. So then I'll find another route. So I feel by making this a fun experience, then the worry of thinking, well, it doesn't always make sense, isn't really important.
Okay.
And I have one thing to say too, because as you were talking, it reminded me of the beginning of the book when he described the definition of alchemy. And he said, alchemy is taking something common and turning it into the pure and rare. So do you want to live your life common? Or do you want to live your life in the pure and rare of who you are?
And the other thing, you know, for those new readers and the new people, like I said, they're the ones that have the more intense questions here. Okay, as you move forward, you know, as Joyce's point was, there's nothing so intense that you have to be 100% accurate on anything right now. Okay, and you will come to a place to where you will know when you've got what you got. And you just take it a grain at a time, a step at a time, and what you can understand and what you can use to use it. Okay. I don't necessarily believe that it has to be fun to be doing something. Fun to me is when I'm laughing and really maybe being foolishly playful. Okay. But that it is pleasant, it's rewarding, and that it's loving and caring. And that when you actually know that you're seeking and you come to do and integrate what you feel you now understand, You become someone exploring self-love, self-respect, and self-awareness. And in that, you begin to see things in the world that you could never, ever imagine, and more than likely is not in any book you'll ever read. and that's you. That's what you'll find is you. And you will find that center of who that is by doing many practices, doing many exploring kind of activities to help you come to a realization. And so, yes, I still would say with all my heart that a serious first student and one who's coming straight out of what we call straight time, I still would say Mind into Matter would be the book that I suggest. And while as it gets intense and it gets really deep into stuff, as we've all shared, me and the co-host will tell you, we have never just read this book once. Okay, many people have read it at least five. I know that every co-host that's on the show with me right now has met it multiple times. And if we don't read it from front to cover again, we go to different parts of it. Like there could be a situation and then you'll open the book and you realize you highlighted that part. And that right now is exactly where that applies. So let's be the mouse and know that enlightenment, okay, and supreme acts of power is what we're going for. That's our cheese. And I say extreme acts of power because we are here to help the world become harmoniously one in love and beauty. Yes, we can do that. And so we ask you stay with us each week, and we will come back to chapter 8 again and still go through that. If this is the point where we have to even make it clear before we conclude our book, we're more than happy to do that. And we're very happy for any communication you give us. And again, I stress, please go to our website, Quantum Leap Book Club, and actually bring your questions there, not just on the other social media that you're responding to. Please come direct to us. We would love that. Okay. All right. Co-host, any message for the holidays you'd like to leave our listeners? Joyce?
I would like to say that enjoy who you are, because that's what this book is helping us become, to know who we are and what we can do in this world to be exactly what we came for.
Wonderful. I'm asking you to close with a message for the holidays that we're into. So you want to try again?
Well, that's sort of where I was going, because I think we can enjoy the holiday very, very much if we accept ourselves and accept that whoever we're with, we can give our best to in our love.
Great. Karina.
I would just love to wish everyone a wonder-filled season, just taking it all in and just love everything to pieces.
Geraldine.
May the beauty find you and all the interactions you have with family, friends, nature, whether it be virtual because of the new state of the world or in person, your feelings will still absolutely have an impact.
That's wonderful. And I would say to everyone, live through these wonderful seasons. This whole month has been just a map of coming together in sacred spaces with very different cultures and worship. And in each one of them, there's the delightful story of something that lifts us to a greater height and brings us higher in the spiral of life. Celebrate it through the eyes and the heart of the pure and innocence of a child. Come to it the first time, each time, and let it resonate into the universe as no time ever before. May you have peace and comfort and family, loved ones, and a wonderful season. And we'll see you after the new year. Meanwhile, all good things. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Quantum Leap Book Club. For more information where you can contact us, go to LOARadionetwork.com/quantum-leap. Have a great week.